But we begin with a 2009 conversation with Nicholas Wade, who at the time was the New York Times science writer. He was on State of Belief to discuss his book, The Faith Instinct, How Religion Evolved and Why It Endures.
Now, how does one explain the universality of this practice of religion? According to a new book, the answer lies in human evolution. The book is called The Faith Instinct, How Religion Evolved and Why It Endures. The book is written by New York Times science reporter Nicholas Wade. Religion, as Wade writes, played such a positive role in early societies, binding people together, creating a moral fabric, that it became ingrained in human nature. Humans essentially became hardwired for faith. Joining me right now to talk more about this subject is Nicholas Wade. Nicholas, thanks for being with us on State of Belief.
Thanks for inviting me.
Now, what evidence do you see for the existence of what you call the faith instinct?
Well, the best evidence is that, as you mentioned just now, religion is universal. So it's an ancient behavior, but it's found in every society throughout the world, which strongly suggests that it has a biological or a genetic basis.
I often quote my friend Karen Armstrong on this show when she says that all the world's religions boil down to the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. She sees that as evidence that compassion can be found at the heart of all religion. You seem to be saying, and I certainly don't want to put words in your mouth, that this golden rule actually had very practical implications in that it helped societies survive. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, that is correct. But I have I put it slightly differently from the way Karen does. I think the moral instinct is separate from the religious instinct. I think we do have a moral instinct, and you can see the beginnings of it in monkey and ape societies. But there's a difference between knowing what is right and actually doing it. And I think the religious instinct came along later in our evolution and was a way of enforcing what is there in the moral instinct of placing in people's minds the idea of a divine overseer who would punish them severely if they didn't follow their inner moral leanings.
So in some ways, the religion instinct, the instinct of faith, is even stronger.
Yes, it's more encompassing than the moral instinct. It has a more general purpose, which is essentially to give group cohesion to a society, to get everyone on the same page, emotionally committed to doing whatever it is that the society needs to do to survive. So that includes sustaining the moral fabric internally, and externally it means being willing to defend the society against others.
Are you arguing at all that an early society of atheists would not have survived?
I think that is exactly the implication. In these early societies, the pace of warfare was very intense, and the only ones that survived were those that had a strong religious instinct, and we are the descendants of those survivors. Now, the situation in modern societies is a little different. I think you need a society to have some religious instinct, some way of sustaining the moral fabric, but on an individual basis, it doesn't make a lot of difference if many members of that society are agnostics or atheists.
I talk with a lot of people today who say they have nothing to do with organized religion, but personal spirituality is extremely important to them. Where do they fit into this?
Well, I think they fit in because, as I argue, everyone has this sort of yearning for religion, this willingness to emotionally commit to the religion of their community built into their genes into their neural circuits. So usually this happens around the age of puberty. That's when people are confirmed or bar mitzvahed. That's when people went through initiation rites in primitive societies. And that's when religion is meant to be learned. There's a sort of biological window for it, just as there's a biological window for learning language. Now, if you don't learn religion during that window, maybe, I think for many people, you're still left with that sort of residual yearning for spirituality, for the belief there must be something out there larger than ourselves. And that's where That's why so many people without a formal religion, nonetheless, are still trying to find one.
You have a fascinating chapter in the book in which you write about religion and commerce. You say that as a society evolved from hunter-gatherer to settled societies, that religion was key to setting up early economies. Now, how is that so?
Well, religion was the method of government for primitive societies. It did absolutely everything that these early societies needed to do to get them organized. So one of the things they did was to sort of trade things between each other, and that was done on the basis of trust. And the way you set up trusts in primitive groups was to do it within the framework of religion. So many primitive peoples have exchanges like the potlatch ceremonies of the West Coast Indians, which are embedded in a religious framework. And modern societies have followed the sort of general tendency of creating secular institutions that take over the role of religion. But often when you scratch the surface just a little, you find religion is still there. And I think this is probably true of the transactions that take place in modern societies. I mean, it's true we have the courts and the police for sort of policing and monitoring things that go wrong, but you can't possibly do that with every transaction. So, you know, the guy you meet in a store, the stranger you meet in the street, your interactions with them are sort of governed by this basis of trust. And if you try and trace that further back, well, where does this basis for trust come, which is kind of extraordinary when you think that it sort of exists between complete strangers in a large city like New York. I think the answer is basically that it comes from ideas of morality that are enforced by ideas of religion.
How do you say what you do, which I'm not questioning, but how do you say what you do without turning religion into a means to an end when a lot of people think religion is somewhat an end in itself?
Well, that's a very good question. I do argue in the book that religion is a means to an end. It's a means to giving us group cohesion, which is very hard to obtain in other ways. And then I argue it's up to each society as to how it uses that group cohesion, whether for good or for bad ends. That I think is what natural selection has seen. So that I would say is the evolutionary perspective on religion. But I should hasten to add that cannot be the whole story. It's just part of the story.
Mm-hmm. I know you see the same polls that I see here in the United States. More and more people are gravitating away from organized religion. Church attendance is decreasing. All the major denominations are losing members. What does this tell you about religion and evolution, and particularly what does it mean for the future of religion?
Well, I think it's very hard to say. I mean, the first thing one might observe is that the United States is still a far, far more religious country than most states of Europe that have been rapidly secularizing in the last 50 years. There is a sort of downward blip in church attendance, whether it means a great deal for the religiosity of the United States, I don't know. I do believe that since religion is sort of imprinted in our neural circuits, it's never going to go away. But I wouldn't be surprised if it sort of waxes and wanes according to particular circumstances. I think certainly in the United States, one of the features of our religion, which is very interesting, is that we have lots of different sects, all of which compete with each other, but in a sort of perfectly peaceful way, which certainly contrasts with the situation in Europe, where there are often sort of wars with different sects on opposite sides. And now some people think that because we have these many different sects furiously competing for members with each other, that's what keeps religion alive in the United States. The competition creates, in economists' parlance, a demand for religion, and that's why there are more consumers of religion in the U.S., and that's what keeps religion so vital here compared with in England, for example, where if you get a sort of stipend from your bishop every week, the minister doesn't have to go out and hustle for customers. There's no competition. There's a monopoly, as it were. So religions in countries where there's only one religion don't have to try as hard as they do in this country.
Nicholas Wade has worked at the New York Times as an editorial writer, editor, and science reporter. His new book is called The Faith Instinct, How Religion Evolved and Why It Endures.
After retiring in 2012, Nicholas Wade continues to contribute to the New York Times. In 2014, he released A Troublesome Inheritance, Genes, Race, and Human History, a book that provoked coordinated criticism from part of the scientific community.